Guys, and welcome to our next Founding Member Club only call here for the DAO of Badass. My name is Joshua Pellissier. I am here with Brad Osborne. Brad, you here?
Yes, I am.
Right on. I thought you were here. He's not sitting in the same room with me this time. We're doing a little remote thing, so testing this out. Hopefully this works out okay. It was getting kind of scary having to sit next to Big Brad so much. You know, he's so tall. I'm so small. Anyway, so today we are going to be going over a couple of things, and I'd like to get questions from you guys as much as possible. We're going to be going over recognizing and eliminating excuse processes. This is essentially how you can tell whether or not what you have in your head is actually an excuse or what you have in your head is actually valid, right? So we're going to go over the difference between valid excuses and actually ideas, like valid thoughts. And then excuses, right, that are just trying to hold you back. So we're going to go over that. Go ahead.
This concept alone would put you, I mean, it puts you like ahead of 99% of people ever, because most people don't care if what they're thinking is an excuse or not. It's just the reality.
Well, that's kind of like the nature of the excuse, right? I mean, it's designed so that you feel like it logically makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why we sort of fall victim to that sort of thing. So I can't wait to sort of expose that so you can kind of see it yourself. Sometimes I can't even see it myself, but I started getting a feeling now. I've kind of trained myself to feel like a complete pussy if I start giving myself excuses. So I know it sounds kind of intense and maybe something you're not that interested in creating for yourself, because it would mean you have to face all your problems, right? Like, you can't walk away from something if you feel like a pussy every time you realize that you have an excuse. So if you do apply this, it's going to completely change your life. You're right, Brad. It's going to change the way you look at everything. So keep that in mind. Don't do it unless you're ready to take the plunge. And then the next thing I'm going to talk about is is sort of energy level. And should you come in when you're talking to a group of women, should you come in high energy, like exciting and having a good time, or should you come in mellow and kind of chill out? You know, what should sort of be your vibe when you first walk up to a group of women? And I'm going to talk a little bit about that as well. So a lot to cover today, but hopefully we can get through it. We can get to some questions, and I can interact with some of you guys. As always, if you are listening on your telly or on Skype, you're going to press *2 to raise your hand, and I can see you do that. When you have a question, just press *2. And on this magical thing called the internet, I can see that you raised your hand. You don't literally have to raise your hand in person, so keep that in mind. But if you do it, you know, I'm not
going to
judge you.
Like 10 founding members who have been here from the beginning, like, oh, that's what he was talking
I
about.
I see. Man, he should have said that. And if you're listening on the web, which we have quite a few people listening via webcast, then you can go ahead and put your questions right there in the questions box, and I will get those immediately, and you won't have to wait until, and you don't have to say anything either. Some people like that. They prefer not to chat too much. But if you have a hard time talking to me, you're sure shit gonna have a hard time talking to women. So let's try to be as verbal as possible here. If you can be verbal with your question, press *2 if you're calling in on your phone, and then type in your question if you have it right there on the web. So over the past couple of different founding member club calls, I've been going over some interesting concepts. One is how to deal with guys who are kind of jerks in bars. And that is, there's a lot of different ways to handle that, and I went over those in the last few calls. And then also something called pattern interrupts. And that is essentially how to snap somebody out of their mental process and wake them up so they talk to you. I mean, it's kind of interesting how we have all these different autopilot responses that we use. So, but you
I
can't.
Just, I just saw this, like, a huge example of this last night mm-hmm. with a waitress at a bar. Mm-hmm. She was just like going around. She had this sort of sour look on her face, you know, just like, I like asked her what her name was. She told me and then just left, you know, and she just like wasn't having it, wasn't paying attention. She was just doing her job, like focused, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was like, man, this girl, I gotta break through that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the next time she came around, I said something to her and she just kind of brushed it off. And then I was like, you were more into the Care Bears, weren't you? And she was like, wait, what? I was like, oh, wait, no, wait. I'm guessing My Little Ponies. And she was like, and then she smiled. And then she was like, she literally set down all the, like, you know, five plates and like three glasses that she had. And she was like, what was your name again? Cause I had already introduced myself.
Right.
And it just, it completely, like her face changed, you know, her eyes looked up. She like started to smile. Like it really does snap people out. It's like they've just been sitting there in this daze, and then they go, wait, what? they're in a whole new environment now.
You know, the important concept here that may be kind of going unsaid because it seems so obvious to me, because I've been doing this for a while, like, you know, making good use of pattern interrupts for a long time, but it may not be obvious for everyone else, and that is that you cannot attract a woman when she's in autopilot. You can't do it. It will not work. Everything that you say will kind of go in one ear and out the other for her.
You can't really do anything fruitful when people are in autopilot.
Well, I mean, I guess if, I don't know. I mean, it depends on what fruitful means, you know? I mean, if you
want... Conversationally fruitful.
Not fruitful relationship or attraction-wise. Yeah, there's no way. Brad, I think I hear you kind of breathing into the microphone there. It sounds like you're like this. So, anyway.
Yeah, that happens a lot, I guess.
Keep it away.
Maybe my company should buy me a nicer mic.
Your company. Okay, anyway. Let's have a business meeting right in the middle of all this. So I wanted to kind of go over that a little bit. Definitely that you cannot attract women if she's an autopilot or if you're an autopilot, to be honest. But you can avoid any kind of emotional association or emotional spike while you're in autopilot, as long as you don't snap out of it, which is why I think a lot of women go into autopilot during work or things like that. You know, another really great thing to do is if you are going to create an autopilot response, like something that you kind of go through in a daze, it might be fun to create an autopilot response around approaching. This is really, really interesting. So whenever I did this before, when I first realized that you could do this, it was basically started out with me taking a belief and then submitting my belief, like learning how to submit my belief. And I went through my process of like, okay, well, I have, I'm not really the kind of guy who approaches women, who talks to them whenever I'm attracted to them. I just don't really do that naturally, you know? So I went from that to going, okay, well, you know, I'm the kind of guy who does that. I approach anybody who I'm interested in. And I just kind of changed my mind on that, right? So as soon as I submitted this, I started noticing that I would have, that my mind started creating an autopilot response around it. And the way this works, the way the autopilot responses work is that whenever you have a task or something that you're doing in general that you need to create a belief around in order to do, like, for example, I'm a server or I'm a waitress, right? That's a belief. I am a whatever, right? Or I'm the kind of man who blank, right? These are all beliefs. As soon as you create a belief, your subconscious mind goes into autopilot creation mode, right? It starts to create some kind of autopilot response to make this thing work easier, because it's going to stay here. That's what it thinks, right? As soon as the belief is submitted, it's like, okay, this is real, and we need to make sure that this is easy to do, right? So you're not taxed too much. So what I did is when I started believing that, and then right after, whenever you create a belief system, right after you create that belief system, anything that you do after that, your subconscious mind is paying very close attention to, because it thinks it's part of the process you're about to create, right? So what you do immediately after you create a belief is crucial. It's very, very crucial. If you start to do it and then you stop, you have created a belief system, but you have nothing to balance it on, nothing to like leverage it with, right? You don't have any habits yet that fall in line with this belief system. And then eventually the belief system gets pushed away because you don't take action on it. So when you create a belief system that you approach women that you're curious about, or anybody that you're curious about for that matter, then it's really important that you approach like a madman for a little while. It only has to be for like, you know, a few days. If you approach just 10 women a day for 3 days, right? That's 30 women. That's a lot of women for most guys. But if you do this, what will happen is your subconscious mind goes, okay, got it. I got the pattern. Whenever you see a girl that you're attracted to, I'm going to make you feel compelled to walk over there. And I'm going to get rid of all these fear responses that you have. This is really the ultimate way to get rid of approach anxiety, is to create this belief and then practice for a little bit, and then it just sticks just like that. You're fine. You see a girl and then your anxiety's gone, because it's not efficient for your subconscious mind to make you feel anxiety if it's something that you're going to be doing often, right? So this is really, really important. And I'm really glad that you brought this up, Brad, that we started talking about this a little bit more, because we did talk about it a lot, but we didn't get into this last time. You know? You there? I think you're there.
Yes.
Okay. You're hiding from the microphone, I guess. But yeah, so ultimately, when you do create that new belief system, let's say that, you know, if you haven't learned how to do that, go back and read the chapter on confidence and belief creation in the Tao of Badass. And get that information down. It's a 5-step process, very simple process, and very simple steps, at least. And you have to go through them. It's simple, but not easy, just to be honest. I mean, it's simple to understand, easy to follow, but difficult to do because we just get scared, right? And that's generally how it is. So if you go through that process and you do end up creating the belief that you are the kind of guy that approaches anybody you're interested in or curious about, which I highly suggest you do, it's a very, very powerful belief. Whenever you submit that, if you go a few days of approaching like crazy, then you will automatically feel your approach anxiety drop to, you know, 1% of what it was before. 1/100th of the feeling of nervousness and 1/100th of the feeling of anxiety will be there. And that's it. And it'll be just like if someone's like, hey, are you gonna drink tonight? Do you want a beer? Or do you want to drink this shot? And you're like, I don't know. Okay, fine. Right? That kind of nervousness, which isn't like, oh my God, if I drink this shot and I get drunk, everyone's going to hate me. And you know, like, you're not thinking about that whenever you get a shot, but most of us aren't, at least when we get a shot put in front of us. You know, it's more like, I don't know if I want to do, okay, fine. Right. Okay, fine. I'll do it. So, you know, that's the kind of nervousness that you'll feel, like 1/100th of the approach anxiety experience that you have now, if you have it. Right. And you can do this around anything. Anytime you create a new belief system, if the actions that you take directly after that sort of create an autopilot response, and that can either work toward you, for you, for your greater good, for yourself, and for what you desire, or it can work against you and kind of make you feel like you are checking out at times, like just not mentally there. So the approach process will be there, and then you'll be able to sort of snap out of the pattern as soon as you get to start talking to a girl, you know. And if you can add banter into that pattern too, I highly suggest you do that too. So anyway, that's sort of a little hack there that we never talked about, which is pretty cool. So hope you're writing that down. If you're not, you can obviously listen to the recording of this. No big deal. So let's talk a little bit about recognizing and eliminating excuse processes. Let me just double check to make sure that that I'm not missing anybody's questions here. Getting people who are – looks like they're typing in some questions. So if you do have them, go ahead and type them in now if you're online, or raise your hand with *2. Now, if you can, and I will go ahead and start this queue up so that we can put them all in the right order. So go ahead and do that. So first, let's go over what an excuse process is and why it happens in the first place. We're going to be talking a lot about psychology in the first part of this Founding Members Club call. And then the second part, we're going to be talking a lot more about energy level, which is a lot more actionable and applicable to attraction and to approach, which is a lot easier to put into practice. So we'll go over this. Brad, I can still hear you breathing there, by the way.
Huh.
I don't know.
We'll try turning down my mic volume.
Could you take the microphone out of your nose? Maybe that's what it is. So what is an excuse process? An excuse process is, well, it's pretty simple to understand, really. It's a step-by-step sort of system that you go through automatically whenever you are afraid that an outcome is not going to be in your favor. And these are you can use for anything. You can say that an excuse process could be around whether or not you should lose weight or stick to a diet, right? You may have excuses around that. In fact, anybody who's overweight definitely has excuses around losing weight, for sure. Right? They're all there. And at some point, you have to just kind of go, all right, well, shut up. Tell yourself to shut up and just kind of do it anyway, right? But that's usually not enough. So we're going to go over a little bit more about that just here in a minute and how to get over it. But the big one that I'm talking about now is the moment when you're at a bar and you have that crucial sort of crossroad that you're facing. And you're standing and you can go one direction or another, but not both. And to the left, you see a night where you are approaching women And, you know, and then beyond that, you don't really know what's going to happen, right? It's kind of hazy. You can't really see down that road very well. It's kind of like the dark kind of scary road. But it's, you know, it looks like it'll be fun at least for a little bit, but then you don't know what's going to happen. And then to the right, you have sort of safety. You have this thing that you've done in the past, which is okay, I cannot approach any women. But if I do that, I need a lot of excuse processes, right? If I go to the left, I don't need any excuses. If I go to the right, I need lots of them, right? Because the truth is, you're not approaching because you're scared. That's why, right? You're scared that you're going to get rejected. Because on the left, there is a road that has fog, that is, you can't see it. You don't know the outcome. You're unsure of what's going to happen to you. And there is fear in there that it's possible that down that road is going to be some negative thing that's going to happen to you, right? Like rejection, that kind of thing. And it's possible that you take a couple steps down that road and it's nothing but rejection the whole time, you know? And this is the big fear for a lot of people. And this was definitely my fear when I first started out too, until I figured out how to get over this. So what we do is, instead of saying, okay, well, we can't, instead of accepting that we were scared to go down there, we have to come up with some other reason, because if we're scared, now we're judging ourselves. And that means that we're not quality men, at least not high quality or valuable men. And we don't want to think that as men. So instead, we come up with something that seems to be like a really, really good lie, really. And that is an excuse. You come up with something that as far as anyone else knows, it's true. But you know, and I know, that it's not true and that you're making it up. And there's a really clear way of telling telling whether or not a thought that you're having is an excuse process or not. And I'm going to go into that in just a minute. So that's an excuse process. An excuse process is basically in place to keep you safe, to keep you from risking anything unnecessarily. And you start to have these excuses, these thoughts, they seem very valid thoughts that keep you from doing something that you know you really should be doing. And instead of doing it, you end up just kind of hanging out and standing around at the bar and then talking to a couple people. And then, of course, as you're standing there, you're not approaching any women or you're not building any social value. And so you are dropping value and women are becoming less attracted to you over time. So if by the end of the night you decide to muster up the energy to actually go and approach, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to go back and I'm going to take that left road just for a little bit to see how it goes. Screw it. You know, I can do this. If you go back later on in the evening and you try to do that, it's not going to work, because now women have seen you stand there and they've seen you waste time and kind of shark around and do what I call drink guarding, which is where you put your drink right in front of your chest to make sure that you are safe, which is what we do when we're scared. We put stuff in between us and other people, especially in front of our chest. So if you've been doing that all night, women have been staring at you doing that and noticing you doing that, and they've probably been trying to turn their backs to you a little bit so you don't go up and try to approach them. And so now when you come in, you're already coming in from a really negative place. And this is obviously a very difficult thing to go through. So that's an excuse process. And now I talked a little bit about why it happens in the first place. You're trying to sort of save yourself. And it's basically, you're in an emotional state in that moment, and you're trying to come out with something logical, some logical reason not to do something in whatever situation it's in. But since you're in an emotional state, you can't come up with a logical process. Okay, so let me explain this for a second. You have two different sides of your brain. You have your logical brain and you have your emotional brain. This is widely accepted and probably common knowledge to a lot of people on this call. So whenever you have, let's say your logical brain being exercised, the interesting thing is that you have to share resources with your emotional brain. And that means that if you're doing something very logical, your emotional brain begins to die down. It begins to soften out a little bit and mute a little. And as your emotional brain mutes and as it becomes quieter and quieter, you're able to do things that are purely, like, supernaturally logical. Like stand in front of somebody that you really care about, a friend of yours, and tell them something that they need to hear, right? Maybe normally this would be really difficult for them and they might cry and you might be scared to tell them. But if you're in an extremely logical place, you can just confront things and there's no fear, right? Because unless there's a logical fear, right? But fear is an emotion. So as soon as you start feeling fear, then your emotional brain heightens and your logical brain drops down, right? And this is sort of one of the reasons why in an environment like a bar or a place for any place where you really are thinking about approaching women, if you begin to have approach anxiety, your fear heightens your emotional brain. Now, when this happens, your logical brain does not exist, but your emotional brain is very, very tricky and very smart. And it knows that if you don't have any kind of logical thought or logical connection there, that, or it doesn't seem logical, that you're not going to go for it, right? You're going to feel like a wimp. And feeling like a wimp doesn't make you feel, it doesn't make you stay in an environment and doesn't make you feel successful, right? So instead, it does something really interesting. It begins to give you emotional versions of logical thought process and logical excuses and logical reasons why you shouldn't do something. And these things don't make any damn sense whatsoever, right? If you took yourself out of the situation and you looked at it, you'd be like, what? What is that? What was I thinking, right? It wouldn't make any sense at all. And the reason why this is bad is because it's sort of the worst thing you can do because it stops you from learning when your learning curve will be at a peak, right? So it's kind of like running until your heart rate starts to increase and then stopping altogether, right? So if you're going to work out and you really wanted to lose weight, you have to run and you have to keep your heart rate up and then you have to keep it at a fat burning level. This is really common knowledge for anybody who wants to lose weight, by the way. It's just common knowledge. You can look this up and find it out. Once you keep your heart rate at that level, you begin to burn fuel. That's what you do. So you'll burn fuel and you'll begin to burn fat as a source of fuel. So you'll go through a couple of different fuel sources most likely, and then eventually you'll get to fat. Like sugar might be one first, and then you burn through fat. So as you burn through this fat, you are basically needing to keep yourself at that peak level the entire time. It's important that you do that. If you drop down below it, you can do that for a little while to rest, but you have to come back up and really ramp it back up again. So if you look at your approach and these excuse processes in a similar way, your learning curve is at a peak whenever you are at an environment that scares you, right? Whenever you're standing in the middle of a room full of things that really scare the crap out of you, your learning curve is huge. That means that you have the ability in that moment to look around the room and approach as much as possible, and you will retain about 80% more information and lessons, and you'll alter your behavior 80% faster while you're in that scared space. And there's a great book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And if you haven't checked it out, I suggest you check it out. And it kind of goes over some of these concepts too, and why you should feel fear and go and push through it, and the kind of positive responses that happens whenever you do that. But ultimately, in this case, you need to know that if you go up to the point when you're scared and then you stop over and over again, that you are going to never see the kind of results that in the amount of time that you want to see them, you'll never see those kind of results. As someone who had everything exactly the same as you, say we could clone you, and that person was standing next to you, your clone was standing there, if they pushed through it and you didn't, they would see results 80% faster than you would. And this is very crucial. This is very important, because as you put yourself in these different positions, you're going to have nights where you're exposed to a lot of women, a whole lot of women, lots of different kinds of women in all different walks of life, hanging out and talking all at the same time. And if you're in that environment and you don't take advantage of it, you don't sort of go through and say, okay, I'm going to approach as many people as I can in here, and I got to push through this, and I got to talk to as many women as I can, talk to as many guys as I can, and really, really push this to the next level, then what you're doing is you're pulling up to that level where you could be growing the most, and then you're backing down. And if you keep doing this over time, you'll begin to see that it's taking you a lot longer than it's taking everybody else. So I guess the real question here is, how do you recognize your own excuse processes? Well, there are a couple ways of doing this. The most effective way to do this is to start a pact with a friend of yours, right? So just basically say, hey, look, I realize that I have a lot of excuses around this, and I need you to help me push through it. Tonight when we go out, so if you're going out with a friend of yours, tonight when we go out, if you hear me say anything that's an excuse for approaching women, I want you to slap me, right? Or if every time that I have an excuse for approaching women, I will buy you a shot, you know, or I'll buy you a drink, or I'll buy you and two of your friends a drink, right? Whatever it is. And so basically you go, okay, you have this pact with the person that you're with. It's important that you put something on the line. If you don't put something on the line, then we really won't do anything. I mean, you won't avoid this whatsoever. You'll be like, oh, well, you know, let me know whenever I have an excuse process. And he's like, hey, this is an excuse process. And you're like, oh yeah, no, it's not. It's fine. It's not really an excuse process. You won't really have any way of fighting it, you know? So if you make some kind of a bet, basically, or a deal with a friend of yours, you won't have to buy very many shots of drinks, I promise, because as soon as you screw up the first time, you're going to feel like you let him down and you're losing. And that's what you want. You want to have a negative association with excuse processes, especially when it comes to approaching women. So that's one way to do it, is to have someone sort of on your team to make sure they call you out. The second way of doing it is a little bit more difficult because it requires that you snap yourself out of the excuse process and wake up a little bit. And that is basically being completely honest with yourself, right? And whenever you're making up an excuse process, you know really deep down that it's a lie. You know that. So if you have the ability to be completely open and honest with yourself, you can stop yourself from making excuses. You can go, ah, oh, shut up, Josh. Like, that's what I used to say to myself. Shut up, man. What the hell are you talking about? Stop being such a pussy, right? And that's what I would say to myself all the time. Brad, you've had I know you've had a couple of times when I talked to you about, you know, how you had excuse processes in the past, and I think you put on your phone, you wrote down, or did I write down for you? You took a picture of it and put it in as your background.
Yes.
Do you still have that?
Yes.
What does it say?
It says, "Man up, stop being a little bitch."
Okay. So whatever it is that you need to see often to help yourself get past these excuse processes, you need to put in a place that you're going to see every day if possible. And one of the best ways to do that is if you have like an iPhone or some kind of a smartphone that's got an image in the background, write this down, write "man up" or, you know, write "man up" is probably the best way to explain it. But if you know that you can take looking at your phone and see "stop being a little bitch" and that, you know, it's going to motivate you, then you need to write that down too. And then take a picture of it and set it as your background on your phone. You can also set it as your background on your computer. This is really, really important because if you do this, you will notice that every time that you see your phone, you are reminded that you can't make excuses, right? And this is important because as you look at it, your conscious mind programs your subconscious mind. So as you see it, your subconscious mind begins to fall in line with this and it begins to go, okay, I have to man up. Like, this is something that I do. I'm a man, right? I can't do anything that acts outside of that. And I can't, your subconscious mind won't let you do anything outside of that. And if you feel like not approaching equals not being a man, then if you consider yourself a man, you will approach, right? Makes complete sense. Makes complete sense. So let's talk a little bit about how to decide the difference between a valid concern of yours and an excuse. And I can tell you right now that 95% of what you experience is going to be excuse. Because otherwise, you won't be wondering, right? You won't be going, is this an excuse? Is that an excuse or is it not? Right? You'll just be like, oh, this is, I can't go in there because I've got, let's say a chain wrapped around my leg and it's tied to this pole, right? That's logical. I have to get this chain off before I can go in there. But if I do, I'll go in, right? So usually this comes up in a way that seems really logical in the beginning, and then that one objection you have is removed and you begin to make more objections that don't make any sense, right? So let's say, for example, that let's say it was a boot camp you're talking about. You know, logically, I think a lot of people decide they want to take a boot camp, especially founding members. I have a lot of founding members come through in boot camps. And you go, you know what? I need to take a boot camp. I just don't have the money right now, right? And I'm sure this is a common, you know, concern for a lot of people. And then all of a sudden, you have money, right? You do something at work, you get a bonus, or you save up, and you have the money now, right? Well, you have nothing to fall back on. If you say, nah, I can't take a boot camp. I got something else, right? Oh, I can't take work off, right? It sort of falls down to the next excuse. If you start to see this excuse ladder start to happen, then you know for sure that you're in the middle of experiencing what is absolutely an excuse process. And in order to sort of eliminate that, typically you want to take action immediately so that you stop doing that, right? So that you force yourself to commit to it. And just like, you know, if you're thinking about taking a boot camp in that sort of analogy, if you're talking to a woman or thinking about talking to a woman and you have that fear sort of rise up out of nowhere, you have to notice that if you have a legitimate excuse, then it'll come to you almost immediately. It'll be an obstacle between you and this thing, this person, this activity, whatever it is, a real obstacle. It will be like, I can't go over there because I'm stuck in this annoying conversation, right? And so it's okay. It's like, as soon as I get out of this conversation, I'm going to go over there. So here's what you want to do. Anytime you have sort of, I can't go over there because thought process, you immediately have to work out what you need to do in order to make that possible for you to walk over there. So if there's nothing, if you go, oh man, I really want to go over and talk to her, but that might be her boyfriend, right? So if you don't have a plan where it's like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to walk up and talk to him and then ask them how long they've known each other, right? That's what you can do. You can find out whether or not a girl has a boyfriend instantly by going, so how long do you two know each other? Or how do you two know each other? And then they'll say, oh no, we just met, or, you know, oh, this is my sister, or, oh, we work together, that kind of thing. And if a girl offers that information to you first, then she's telling you, this is not my boyfriend. She's trying to tell you, this is not my boyfriend. Please don't think that it's my boyfriend because I want you to talk to me, right? And if she goes, oh, we're dating, we've been dating for about, you know, a year, whatever, then you can go straight into friend mode and not go any further than that and go, you know what's funny is that I'm sitting back there and I'm looking at the two of you and you look like you're having such a good time that I thought that you had just met and he was kind of flirting with you, which is awesome. You know, so you can go into whatever you want and then go, you guys are awesome. Let me introduce you to some other people. And then they become sort of this pivot point for you in the bar or the environment, whatever it is. Instead of walking up and going, oh, she has a boyfriend, and then turning around and walking off. And now this guy's going, man, that guy was kind of creepy. And now he's your enemy and she's looking out for you, right? She's trying to make sure that you're not coming around. So now you have an obstacle in the bar and things get more and more and more difficult as you do that. And if you're not in a bar, the same thing will happen at a party, at a cafe, if it's even during the daytime. You know, if you walk up to someone directly, you ask that question, you get a, yes, this is my boyfriend or whatever, or I have a boyfriend, that kind of thing, and you back off right then, and you leave or excuse yourself, you're basically holding up a sign that says, I'm trying to get laid tonight, and I'm looking for somebody who I think will screw me, right? anybody at all that will fuck me, just please stand in line right here, right? And that's basically, and when women see that, they see desperation, and desperation is a stinky cologne, as the quotation goes. So one of the ways you can tell, like I said, is that you'll have an obstacle in between you and this activity, whatever it is you want to do. So if it's approaching women, you'll have a physical or actual obstacle in between the two of you, in between where you are now and then an action you want to take. And that obstacle, if it's valid, will be a legitimate obstacle, meaning that you have to find a way around it. If your brain doesn't go straight to, okay, how do I find a way around this mode, then that means you're most likely dealing with an excuse process. So this is one of the things that I look for myself. If I say, oh, I should really go over there and talk to her, and then I say something, right? But, you know, she looks like she's in the middle of a conversation. If I feel satisfied with that, then I have a red flag that goes off immediately, right? That goes, oh, wait, why are you satisfied with that? You know, you should be trying to figure out a way around this. There's definitely a way around this. There's a way in there. If you're not trying to figure it out, that means you're giving up and you're taking that as an excuse, and that's not real, right? So you really want to look for that. You want to look for whether or not you give up immediately after you find some kind of a thing that's, you know, whatever the excuse is. If you do, it's an excuse and you have to man up. Sometimes you have to just look at your phone. You know, I would absolutely condone, if you haven't done this yet, you have to do this. Go into the members area, click on the banter cheat sheet, which is up, I believe it's in the resources tab. And let me just go ahead and check real quick just to make sure that that's where it is. I don't want to tell anybody to go up there. I think we're changing that to the bonuses tab soon. So it may be bonuses now, or by the time you listen to this. Nope, still resources right now. But by the time you listen to this, it may be bonuses up there. But either way, it's one of the tabs at the top. And you go there, click on the banter cheat sheet, and then whenever you get there, try to do all this on your phone. Go on your phone and go through the web on your phone and go through the members area, dalbass.com/members, and then click on that tab. Click on the Banter Cheat Sheet, and when you get there, there's a button at the bottom of your phone, if you have an iPhone especially, that says, add this page to my home screen. And I want you to add just the banter lines to your home screen. Now, what this does is it adds a little icon in your on your home screen, and you can click it, and when you hit this icon, it'll launch all the banter lines you need to know, which is badass. So if you're standing there, and you're like, okay, I don't know what to say, so you pull open your phone, you hit the button, and then it pops up all these banter lines, and you just go through, you pick one, and then you walk up, and you can use it. So it sort of gives you a tool that you can use in order to get over your excuse process, and that's really crucial. So you want to have that. You want to have a couple reminders. I have one in my wallet that I always keep with me. It's a reminder of whatever it is I'm trying to learn and implement into my life. I know my last one that I had before I got my new one is how to ask people for more information. I just didn't really know how to do that. Like I would start to give an answer before I listened to their problem because I know a whole lot about psychology, so I would just automatically jump straight into it. And even if the answer that I was giving them was right, they weren't listening to me because they didn't think that I understood their problem. So that was a really big problem for me, and I had to go through and learn how to ask for more information and want to hear more about it. And actually, I started doing that because I had a really terrible memory and I was afraid that I would forget the answer by the time they got finished with their problem. So I wrote that down. I wrote down like the exact sentence that I wanted to say, right? I think it was, I think I have an answer for you, but I want to hear more about this before I say anything. So just continue. I want to hear more about this. And whenever I said that, and I started integrating that. Basically, every time I'd open up my wallet to get anything out, I'd see that in there. It's just a little piece of paper in my wallet. So you can do it in your wallet, on your phone, the background of your computer, and then you can use the home screen button to add banter lines and things like that if you have an iPhone. If you don't, then I don't really know how to add that for other phones, but I'm sure there's a way to do it. So keep that in mind. You want to do whatever you can to stop yourself from creating excuse processes, because in the moment, you will not be able to tell the difference until probably a little bit later on, which is why it's really important to have a friend there that kind of helps you, you know, helps you out and tells you, okay, well, this is an excuse process, dude. You need to man up here. So, guys, again, just real quick, I think I need to tell you this. I had a couple new people show up here. So if you do have a question and you're on the phone or on Skype, press *2. And if you have a question and you're listening on the web, then go ahead and just write your question in right there. Anything that we talked about so far or anything that's going on in your life that you really want any answers for, go ahead and tap that in and we'll unmute you if you're on the phone and we'll read your question out loud if you're listening on the web. So essentially, that's how you can tell if you have an excuse process. Excuse processes will be the difference between you pushing forward or standing around and doing nothing. Now, the biggest sort of, let me tell you what your life will be like. Let me just go this way. Let me tell you what your life will be like if you don't stop these excuse processes. There's an exact sort of formula that everyone goes through. It's a process that everybody goes through whenever you have excuse processes that you've been using for too long. And it sort of looks like this. You begin to feel comfortable in the beginning. You feel like you're off the hook. Right, you're like, oh, I was there. Oh, I got some other excuse, whatever. Then you start to tell other people these excuse processes. This is when everything's get a little bit interesting, right? You go, okay, well, I would go over there, but blah 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 blah, right? And you have your excuse, but you know, I'm tired, or I'm hungry, or it's too loud in here, or it's too dark, or too stimulating, or I haven't drank enough. Whatever it is, right? Now you've created something called consistency. This works against you. You said to someone else that you would walk over there, but there's something in the way stopping you from doing it. And usually you'll say something that they can't disprove, like I'm hungry, or I'm tired, or I'm just not in the mood, or whatever it is, right? And they can't disprove that, they can't prove it, so you're kind of off the hook there, right? So what happens is people start to, especially if you're around other friends that are also giving themselves excuse processes, they're going to jump at the opportunity to be like, yeah, yeah, man, totally, totally. And I'd be doing it too. But blank, right? And they have their own excuse process because that makes them feel better too that you're doing it as well. It's kind of like the blind leading the blind here. So what ends up happening is that you begin to resent the world and the people around you for believing your lies. Because what you really, really want is you want someone to go, shut the hell up and go talk to her, or I'm going to go talk to her and bring her over here. You know, and that's what you really want. You want someone to push you through, but because you're a little nervous about it, you don't do it and you create excuse processes. And so what ends up happening is no one pushes you. You're sort of standing there by yourself. And then you come to a crucial moment in your life when you realize that nobody gives a shit about you. It's the most lonely feeling in the world. It's that no one cares if you stand around for the rest of your life and you don't approach anybody, you don't get any better with any women, no one's going to help you. And that is a terrible, terrible feeling. It's a horrible feeling of loneliness. And no girls are calling you. No one really knows that you exist. You can downward spiral into a depression. And you end up losing your friends because you become a downer. That's nothing but an excuse machine. So I don't want that for you. Instead, I'd like for you to be able to notice when this is happening and create an upward spiral that pushes you out of it, right? Whether that's notes to yourself for later on, or it is, you know, telling your friends to snap you out of it. It's interesting. It's a lot like the movie Memento, if anyone's ever seen that before. In Memento,
brilliant.
Yeah, it's a really, really, really great movie. And in Memento, it's a guy who has long-term memory loss, meaning that he can't remember anything for more than a few minutes, and then he forgets it. Right, so he has to leave notes for himself all over the place. Like he has a note in his pocket, takes a picture of stuff, and he'll write something on the back of it, and he'll put it in his pocket. And he doesn't know what's going on. He's just kind of like wandering around and constantly checking his pockets and noticing, okay, well, I got something in my pocket. Oh, it's a picture of a hotel. On the back, it says a room number, right? And so it's like, okay, well, that must be my room. So he just goes there, and it's all kind of brand new to him. He has no idea what's going on. So this is kind of like how we need to approach excuse processes. In the moment, while it's happening, it's very difficult to snap yourself out of it. So you need to leave yourself little notes and little cues and triggers that go off whenever you are using an excuse process so that you can snap out of it. And the thing that I would do, like I said, is I would look for any time that I felt satisfied with a boundary, some barrier in front of me that was keeping me from going somewhere and keeping me from moving forward. I knew that it was an excuse process, and I immediately got really nervous and said, okay, well, I have to push through this. So, but the reason why that worked for me is because I created a belief system that I'm the kind of man who finds a way around any kind of barrier, right? That I'm the kind of guy who finds a way to make it work, right? So if I said, I want to go into outer space, that's something that I want to do. I said, I'm set my mind to it, and I want to go to outer space. All right? Well, if it was like, well, I'm sorry, you're too short, I'd be like, that's what you say, but I'm going to go to outer space, and I don't really care if I'm too short. You know, I'm going to find a way to do it. I'm going to find a way around it. And if I can't get there, I'm going to get close. I'm going to get as close as I possibly can, or I'm going to simulate the experience in whatever way I possibly can so that I get the experience that I want. And I created that belief, actually, of one of the first beliefs I created to get me out of the trailer park. So I used to live in a trailer park whenever I was younger. And if I didn't create that belief, then I would be stuck there today still. Not that there's anything really wrong with that. And if you are happy with that, that's totally cool. But I wasn't happy with it. I wanted to get out of there. I grew up in the trailer park. I wanted to leave. I wanted to be something. I didn't want to be one of those people that grows up in the trailer park, gets a trailer in the trailer park, at, you know, 300 feet from where I grew up, and then has a family right there, right? And never has any serious ambition or tries to go make anything huge happen in the world. I needed something else in my life. So I created that belief that I'm the kind of guy who, no matter what happens, I don't take no for an answer. I have to find a way around it. You know, I don't give up easily, not very easily at all. If I don't want something, it's easy. I don't really care. Right? But if I do want something and I know that I want it, it's hard to keep me from getting it. You know, I mean, I wanted the girl that I have now is the one girl that I wanted. It took me 8 years to finally get to her, you know, and so until we finally started dating. But I didn't give up. I was like, all right, you know, I didn't keep chasing her either. I went straight to studying this stuff and studied it for about 8 years. And then eventually we got back together again. So for me, it is a really powerful belief system. So whenever I see that and I go, okay, I'm giving up right now and I'm not going after what I want, that's a red flag for me, I have another belief that's in place that triggers the thought that I have, that I'm having an excuse process. And that is a really, really powerful concept. And if you can create that belief, I would. That would be the belief that you go for what you want and somehow you're going to get it, right? You're either going to get exactly what you want or you're going to get something equally as good or better. And that's just how you live your life. Does that make sense? I'm not sure if Brad, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess you turned your mic down or something a little bit. I got a question here from Jonathan, so I'm going to go ahead and take that question. If you do have a question yourself and you're on the phone, like I said, star two, press star two and it'll raise your hand. And if you're on the web, just go ahead and type your question in. So Jonathan is writing in, how can I stop myself from getting anxious and spiraling into insecurity when having problems with speech? Okay, this is, I know the answer to this question, Jonathan, so it's going to help you. As you can tell, as I start to get kind of fatigued when I'm talking, I begin to fumble, right? So you said, like when fumbling with words and not being articulate. I think this happens more when I'm alone and talking out loud to myself, but am hard on myself when I don't speak perfectly. Okay, so I know exactly what you mean by that. I have a really quick speech pattern. I'm sure that anyone who's listening agrees with that. Hopefully it's not so bad that you can't hear anything and it's frustrating. But I have naturally a very quick speech pattern, and I have a really fast metabolism too, and that's just kind of how I am, right? I'm very, I don't know what kind of metabolism or what that means for me, but it's something about the rate at which I operate is very, very quick. And that means that my...
bird.
What is it?
Like a hummingbird.
Like a hummingbird, except larger and more intimidating, I hope. So I sort of have gone my whole life like this, and because my brain works faster than my mouth does, and because I'm extroverted as well. And if you're like talking out loud, talking through concepts, you might be extroverted. And that's what I'm guessing, Jonathan. I'm not really sure yet, but I would probably guess that would be the case. So if that's the case, then you are going to fumble because you're going to be thinking while you're talking, right? And sometimes you're not going to know what to say. So you're just going to keep on talking and you're going to hope something smart comes out. And sometimes something smart doesn't come out. And that's what happens when you're an extrovert. Introverts have another problem, and that is that sometimes they don't say anything when they really want to. So here's what I did to keep myself from fumbling. I used to stutter terribly, but I used to stutter anytime I got nervous. If anyone else has this problem, then you know exactly how annoying it can be, because anytime you talk to a girl you don't know, you're pretty nervous. So here's what I did. There are a lot of ways to get around this and a lot of things that people focus on in order to sort of overcome this problem. But the thing that I found that works the best is that I will begin to move my hands slower in a conversation. Now, this is interesting. When I thought about how I needed to try to slow my voice down, it never worked. It would just, I'd keep talking fast. In fact, I'd get nervous because I'd notice how fast I was talking, and I would talk faster and I would stumble more, and that didn't work. So instead of doing that, I started working on getting control of my body whenever my mouth was out of control, right? So I would move my hands slower. And as you move your hands when you're talking, if you use your hand to gesture a lot when you're talking, if you move them really quickly, then you begin to want to talk faster. That's how it is. In fact, you can kind of do this right now. Do this as an exercise. Stand or wherever you are right now, just kind of, if you're not holding a phone to your head, if you are, then maybe you can just do this with one hand, but try this. Try moving your hands back and forth in front of your body, just like kind of like you're doing karate chops toward something in front of you, and try moving them really quickly. And when you do this, try to relax while you're doing it. It's really difficult to do. I'm doing it right now. Maybe you can hear it in my voice, but you know, it's really difficult to do because you're speeding up your body. And your body thinks, oh crap, I need to speed my speech up. I need to speed everything up because obviously this is important. It sort of gets your adrenaline boosted and it begins to make everything else go quickly too, right? Now try moving about 1/5 of that speed with your hands. The same thing, karate chopping. And try to go fast with your thoughts while you're doing this. You can't. It's really difficult to do it. Instead, everything that you're thinking slows down. I'm doing it right now again. Of course, my speech is slowing down now too. So what I would do is I would notice that my hands were flying around like I'm, you know, like a chef on Iron Chef or something. I'm just like grabbing stuff from nowhere and flinging my arms everywhere. When I notice that, and I'm using a lot of hand gestures really quickly, I slow my hand movements down and I don't worry about anything else. I just keep talking, but I slow my hand movements down. And whenever I do that, my voice automatically comes back down to normal speed. And yours will too, Jonathan. So try that out. It's a really, really powerful thing to do. And it works really well. It worked extremely well for me. It's the only thing I can do to slow myself down. And nothing else has ever worked for me. I've tried everything I can think of. I've tried hypnosis. I've tried belief systems. I've tried to let myself stand in silence and get comfortable with that. All those things help me do other stuff. They help me, you know, get comfortable with, you know, awkward silences, which aren't awkward if you're comfortable with them. It helps me really hold and create power and personal power when I'm talking to a woman. But it didn't help me slow my speech down until I learned how to move my hands slower. So do that, and that will fix that problem for you. And if you have anything else like that, just control your body. In general, if your mind is out of control, you have to control your body, because you can't control your mind if it's out of control. It's because you're trying to use your mind to control your mind. It doesn't work like that. Right? You can't stop it. And if your body's out of control, you have to use your mind to control it. Right? And there are very few situations where your body will be completely out of control. Right? So if you're shaking, you know, or if you're, let's say shaking is a big one because you're nervous, you have to calm down mentally before you'll stop shaking. You can't just go, and try to hold your hand still. It doesn't work like that. Are you going to say something, Brad?
Yeah, I didn't really realize that I was doing this, but I've actually used it the other way around. Sometimes I have this sort of natural, like, really slow, chill way of talking and thinking and whatever.
And whatever.
But it doesn't serve me all that well in attraction, you know.
Yep.
Trying to own a room and be a center of attention, it's, you know, you kind of have to, like, be a little more entertaining and have everybody, like, paying attention to quick movements and stuff, I guess. That's how I saw it. Mm-hmm. And really, I modeled your hand movements.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sort of bouncing around owning the room, which I've seen many times, there's a lot of quick hand movements. And I was like, oh, I'll just start doing what Josh does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that sometimes I'll start talking and I feel that, like, that slow speech pattern coming out normally. And then I'm like, oh no, I gotta like pick it up. So I'll actually just start moving my hands really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it picks up my voice and I start, like, smiling and I actually, like, stand up taller and everything. So mm-hmm. I didn't really realize that that's what I was doing, but I've felt that, the other way, you know, like being extremely, quiet and, or slow. I'm a slow talker, I guess. Naturally.
You got to qualify that slow statement.
Right.
being slow.
Just being slow. But yeah, just having that, like, really slow cadence to my speech naturally, if I started moving my hands around faster, sped up. And it's really good in attraction, and especially in, like, a sort of a crazy environment where there's a lot going on.
Right.
So that's cool.
That actually plays really well into what I want to talk about next, which we're going to have to go over briefly and then go into detail next week in the next call, because we're starting to run out of time here. The next call is going to be on the 16th, by the way, which is next Thursday. Pretty straightforward. And then we'll have another one with a guest coming on board for the 23rd. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But the thing that I wanted to kind of go over, that I wanted to hit on, was higher energy and energy level of coming in. We got a couple more questions here, so maybe I'll take those first. Why don't I do that? So we'll get into energy level in just a minute and how to tell how you should come in, what level of energy you should come in with. First, I got a question from Tony. He says, with spring break coming up, can you do a call or a segment on the mindset, techniques, tips, etc. for dominating vacations or spring break tips? That sounds like a lot of fun. In fact, at some point, I'd love to do a spring break boot camp where it's like you show up. Maybe it's like a singles spring break cruise, or maybe it's in Mexico, right? Whatever. And it is just like tons of people everywhere. and your job is to, you know, we show up there and we'd have like a destination boot camp. When is spring break? Do you know when spring break is, Brad?
I don't. I mean, it's kind of different for every school, but there's a general time period where they all happen.
Let me see if I can look up when spring break is.
And Google.
Yeah, Google will tell me when is spring break 2012. It's funny. This is I went to about.com here, and it's like, when is spring break? And it has a little picture depicting spring break, and it's like 500 women who are wasted dancing around. That's like that's like basically what spring break is. It says that it's March 5th through the 23rd is spring break usually. So maybe we can put something together. I don't really know. That's for next month. So if we can, maybe we'll put that together. Maybe we'll be doing some kind of destination thing, which would be rad. So anyway, if you guys are interested in that, then ping Brad at thedialofbadass.com, and Brad will kind of take a head count of anybody who's interested in going to Mexico or any place like that for spring break, and we might put together a quick small group, vacation kind of boot camp. But so let's talk a little about this. You said that you want to know if it could be like a segment or a call on the mindsets and everything, about mindsets of spring break and how to use, you know, techniques and use spring break to your advantage. Let me put together something for everyone. Let me go ahead and make a little note here for next week. And I will go over the mindsets for spring break then. That way you have it. That way you have some tools to use. And even if guys, you know, I think that a lot of guys get a little bit freaked out and go, oh, well, you know, why would I need that? I'm not in school anymore or whatever, you know, or it doesn't really matter for them. But the truth is, you don't need to be in school to go to spring break. I promise they're going to let you in the country. They'll let you into the bars, even if you have absolutely no desire to go to college and you're not in college. So keep that in mind. So Tony, good suggestion, man. I'll go ahead and put that together for everybody. And if I can do like a special interview or something around that topic, then I might do that. In fact, I think that'd probably be worth it for us to create a product around that at some point, just to kind of create a spring break domination system there. So I got another question from Jonathan here. It says, since there's no set model for what is most attractive, okay, how do I know when I should be striving toward, what I should be striving toward? Let me just understand if I really understand what you mean here. He said, how do I know if I should work on being more funny or serious, outgoing or calm and collected, masculine, nice, bad boy, etc.? I found that being one way often means sacrificing another. Okay, so I know what you're saying now, Jonathan. What you're trying to say basically is that you have all these different parts of your personality that you can bring out. How do you know which one to bring out at which time and which one's best in the moment? So the best way to do this is to assess your surroundings. You want to look at, and actually this plays right into energy level. If you are in an environment that is high energy, that means that there's a lot of stimulation, that people tend to be talking at a higher pitch normally and a higher volume than you would normally expect them to speak. If that's the case, then you can't come in with a calm, sort of collected, or you can, but it's going to be a lot more difficult to come in with a calm and collected mentality into most situations. Now, sometimes you can walk in and you can sort of sweep people away doing that, but it's more like a sniper, you know. You're coming in like a ninja and you're taking people away one at a time, taking a girl off and talking to her somewhere else. So if you are going to do it like that, then you have to know that style. You have to play that style totally. So and one thing that I do is I found my sort of default mode after playing into all these different types of my personality that you're talking about. I would go out for an entire night being funny, right? Or an entire night being serious. And then I'd go out for another night being outgoing and another night being kind of calm, like you're saying, or like reserved. One night being really masculine and like powerfully alpha. Another night being kind of a nice, having a good time guy, right? And I went through this process. I even went through like saying, okay, well, I'm going to pretend like I'm from another country, you know. I'm going to pretend like I'm British or whatever. I have a horrible British accent, by the way. you know, and the thing that I learned after doing all this stuff is that there really is no one way you want to go out, but you need to have all these different parts of your personality built up and ready to use at any moment. And if you don't know what to do and don't know which one to bring out, you want to go to your default. Your default should probably be funny and masculine, but outgoing. that should be your sort of combination for your default personality. If you find that it's not going to work out like that, that maybe, for example, you start to see that the vibe is a little bit calmer, or the person that you're talking to is breathing slower, they're moving slower, they're speaking slower, then you can drop that and sort of get into a more powerfully manly alpha position, because now you're talking to somebody who is very much in touch with their emotions. And really, you're going to want to sort of alter this based on whom you're speaking, to whom you're speaking. That's what it was.
Yep.
You want to basically be able to, at any given point, flip a switch and go, all right, time for me to be having a good time and being playful. And then if you notice it's time to slow down a little bit. In general, in the beginning, your default, if it's lighthearted and fun and masculine but fun, then you're going to attract more women. And then a little bit later on, when you start to have serious conversation with somebody, you get into rapport, you want to switch to friendly and masculine and a little bit more alpha, right? A little bit, not too much more, but really like a nice guy almost. And then from there, when you start to get into seduction, you are powerfully masculine, powerfully alpha, and very like sexually drawn in and sexually open during that time. And you kind of take what you want. And, you know, that's the kind of part of your personality that you let out. So the answer is that, what'd you say?
This actually reminds me, I've been reading Richard's book the last couple of days, and he talked a lot about how he had that experience too when he first like started going out all the time, that he heard all these different experts that were saying like, oh, to get chicks, you got to be a super alpha, dominant, you know, frat boy type guy. And then other people would say like, no, you have to be like a seductive, really sexual, like poet and, you know, that sort of thing. And so he was like dealing with like hearing all these different ideas about what was the perfect personality to have for attracting women.
Mm-hmm. And then he ended up probably coming to the same conclusion that I have.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. He calls them Mr. Sociable, Mr. Friendly, and then Mr. Seducer or something.
Yeah. It's exactly the same thing that I talk about with mine. It's, you know, boy, friend, man, right? In that order. Boy first, friend second, man third, right? And that's like, when you get to that man part of you, you are powerfully a man. You're fully into that position for each one. So that's, Jonathan, it's probably why you have had a hard time figuring out which one to be, because you're trying to be one of those parts of your personality the whole time. And you actually have to do it on a per interaction basis. You have to start in that sort of boy, lighthearted, having a good time, yet masculine, but still having a good time and laughing and being joking and fun and playful. And then you want to move into being friend. And then after that, being, you know, alpha and powerful and sexual. So, and by the way, Brad, you're talking about Richard LaRuna, his book, The Natural, right?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. So if you guys haven't gotten that, it's a good book. I would check it out. I think that Amazon just added a look inside this book section, so you can actually check it out before you get to a place where you're committing to buying it. You know, I like to check stuff out before I buy it. I don't know. It's just kind of how I am. So if you are... if you haven't checked that out, definitely check that out for sure. It's a pretty awesome book, and I think you'll get a whole lot out of it. It's got 4 stars right now, and it's got quite a few reviews, so pretty good book. I had some stuff in there, by the way, that I would probably never teach a guy, because it's a little bit racy, and it could probably be used for evil, but still a really, really good book. If you want to learn that stuff, you want to expand your mind a little bit, I definitely pick it up. So, got one more question here, and then I think we're going to have to wrap up. And it's a question about what I just said. It says, so is the answer that I needed to adjust the surroundings? I was referring more to a default. Okay. Yeah, so we kind of went over that. This must have been written a little bit ago. I find it hard to be congruent with so many different personalities, and that I can't really switch them sometimes, which makes sense because it would be kind of like multiple identities and multiple personalities. Multiple personality disorder, which is definitely not what I'm trying to say here. Don't have multiple personality disorder. That's not going to be good for you. So basically what you want to do is you want to have your default be that playful person. And then whenever you get into rapport with a girl, switch, right? So yes, you're going to have to learn how to switch in the moment for sure. You need to switch to that person. And sort of one of the best ways you can learn how to do this is to literally just give yourself permission. You're not going to look like a weirdo. You're not going to come across like you have MPD, which is multiple personality disorder. You know, you're not going to look schizophrenic. You're not going to look like, you're not going to freak them out. They're going to be very happy that you did this. So you have to keep that in mind. I know that it's a little bit nerve-wracking and it can be a little scary, but trust me on this one. I'll, you know, we'll hold your hand through the process, and when you get done with it, you're going to be very glad that you did, you know. So anyway, you know, just that should answer your question, hopefully, Jonathan, and anyone else who had that question too, that should be pretty close to it as well. So unfortunately, we're out of time now. It's already past 7 o'clock and there are no more questions in here, so I'm going to go ahead and call it a call. Thank you guys very much for being on here. For the next call, I'm going to go into a lot more about what energy level you should come in at and how to tell immediately when you walk up to a group whether or not you should be excited, fun, like flirty, high energy guy, or you should be chill, calm, sitting back, cool guy, right? And these are completely different. You get these wrong one time, you ruin the entire interaction with the entire group of people, and they will be looking out to try to keep you away from them for the rest of the evening or the rest of the time that they see you. So you don't want that to happen. Instead, you want to be able to walk up effortlessly without thinking about it and just experience, you know, a really good, easy time of flirting with and attracting these multiple women at the same time. If you did have one more note I want to make in here is that if you haven't tried this yet, I highly suggest you try it. If you haven't gone out yet to attract and try to attract more than one woman at the same time, I highly suggest that you do it. Highly suggest that you do it. And the reason why is because when you start to learn how to attract more than one woman at the same time, you actually push them against each other and they begin to feed off each other. And what they're feeding and what they're doing and what they're becoming more of is attracted to you. So they feed off of each other trying to be more more interesting to you than the other one is. And you end up using what's called jealousy plotline, which is where you are essentially creating a small level of jealousy in the women that you're talking to, and they're fighting over you. And as they do, you don't even need to like these women whenever it happens, because what will happen is other women who you do like will see these two girls sort of trying to get your attention through their body language, and they'll automatically want to sort of steal you away. This is how you get really, really hot girls to want to hook up with you. Like the girls who are like just the most fantastic, sexy girls in a bar or in any environment, club, anywhere. You get two girls who maybe you're not that attracted to sort of start to fight against each other to get your attention. And we can talk a little bit about that later on, maybe in the next call. Let me just make a little note to do that. Fight over you. There we go. That's an important one. And when they start to fight for your attention, then the girls that you really want begin to see that, and they kind of have a power trip thinking that they can steal you away from these other women. It's like women are just evil like this. They're freaking conniving. So then you can kind of play that against them, and that's really how you can effortlessly attract really hot women. But we'll talk more about that in a bit. So thank you guys very much for being on the call. Thanks, Brad, for being here. And if you guys have any questions that I didn't get to, you can email brad@thedowofbadass.com, and he will ping that over, and we'll set it up. We'll queue it up for the next week's call. So thank you very much, guys, for being here. And I will see you next week, which, again, is the 16th at the same time at 6 p.m. And we'll be here for the Founding Members Club call, and I'll go over high energy, and I'll go over how to get girls to fight over you. And I will talk a little bit about spring break if I can. In that call. So thanks again, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.